Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, it's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going? Are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, at this point, anything we get from the Sabres is maybe a little bit unexpected. Certainly if it's something big, needless to say, but the draft is over, free agency mostly over, and it's, I think, mostly break time. However, yesterday, the new goalie spoke, Alex Lyon. Paul Hamilton with us now to reflect here on the Wester Hotline. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Paul, so what were your takeaways?
Well, when he was investigating, he actually knows two goaltenders that have played with the Sabres. Way back when he first started with Lehigh Valley, he was with Dustin Tokarski. And then with the Red Wings very recently, he was with James Reimer, so he wanted to talk to both. And I remember James Reimer last year really liked playing in Buffalo. He liked his teammates. He liked the team. And, you know, he hasn't signed anyway. He hasn't officially retired, but I kind of maybe get the impression that maybe he is retired since he was, like, you know, telling Alex Lyon, if you want to go to Buffalo, fine. I'm not going because it doesn't sound like he's playing anymore. So, right. And he was very undecided, you know, at the end of the year. So both had glowing recommendations of Buffalo, and he said that was one of the biggest reasons why he went, because he trusted both those guys, especially James Reimer, in their evaluation and the opportunity he might get here.
And that opportunity should be backing up UPL, you think, Paul? I mean, I suppose There's a scenario where Devin Levi comes in and is undeniable or something, and they've got to make some tough decisions. I don't know, maybe even risk exposing Lyon to waivers like they did with Reimer last year at the beginning of the year and eventually lost him and then reclaimed him and got him back. But I would expect that this guy looks like a good understudy, but also leader for young goalies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he said early in his career he wasn't that guy. You know, he was kind of against the other guy. He was in competition against him. And he said that was the wrong way to be. And he said he's complete opposite of that now. He said goalies have to support goalies. And he said whether you're the starter, whether you're the backup, whatever it is, you got to go out there and do your best. You got to compete with each other, but yet you have to support each other too. And he said that's just something he needed to learn along the way. And probably one of the reasons why, as he talked about, that, you know, he really didn't get chances to play the last couple of years. I mean, his season high was 15 games in the NHL, which was with Florida. And the only reason that was is because he got red hot right at the end of the year. Remember,
right.
He was
rode them right to the playoffs. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And he only played 15 games. That was a career high. And then he played 44 the next year with Detroit and 30 last year with Detroit. It's really the only 2 years that he's gotten any substantial time in the NHL. And as he talked, it just seemed like it took him a while to kind of figure out the game, figure out what he needs to do. What are the best things for him to do? What's the best way to be a good teammate and a good NHL goaltender? And he's figured that out. And as far as I'm concerned, yeah, Lukanen's a starter. I probably would have him the starter too, but you can't wait. If it's 3 weeks into the season and he's still struggling, he's got to be out. I mean, you got to go with Lyon then, and that's why you go with a guy with Lyon over maybe a James Reimer who's 38 years old, because I think you can put him in right away. But Lindy Ruff can't be messing around and risks some sort of goofball losing streak right off the bat or in the first couple of months. If it isn't going, it's got to be changed immediately.
What's your theory on Lukanen? Is it beyond randomness to explain what happened to him last year? I mean, 887 is not great.
No, it wasn't, especially where the last 35 games of the year before, his numbers were either at the top or right at the top of the NHL. And he has played the second most games after January 1st, and it looked like the Sabres had found their number one goaltender. He played like a number one goaltender, and the numbers back that up. He did at times last year, but not enough.
No.
I mean, you didn't get the big save at the big time. The numbers, you know, tell us the story. The eye test and the numbers say the same thing. It wasn't great. Sometimes it was, but sometimes isn't good enough. You know,
right.
If you're going to be a number one goaltender, you got to be good most of the time and have the odd game off, not the odd game good. And the rest of them are like, you know, type of a thing. So he's got to be able to, you know, he's home with his goaltending coach. And one thing I will tell you is he works hard and he works hard at his craft. So he's working at it. I can guarantee that. And whether it translates back into what we saw not last year but the year before, well, only time's going
to
tell us.
Yeah, it's so crazy, Paul, that so much changed. And I'd love to know really from his perspective and maybe even their goaltending staff, like what they see in front of him, like what was different. Because when he broke through and earned that contract extension season before last, we talked all the time here, I remember, with you about how under control he was. Like, he must be stronger because he's getting places quicker but under control.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that goes into that. There's athleticism and training and strength and like all that, physical. But there's also that's got to be in sync with what you're seeing on the ice too, right? Like reading the play, anticipating where it's going, that goaltender supercomputer. And, you know, there's too much noise in the way, interference, then the computer's going to glitch and you're going to be late getting to a place. So you're going to have to slide faster than you want to, which means you're going to be out of control. And then everything just starts toppling, right? Now recovery is harder to get back for a rebound or to the other side if you need to, because the play went behind the net and around and whatever. And there were so many times last year, I'm not even thinking of goals, but just plays in games where I'd be like, oh, no. Oh, dude. Like, what? No. And
some were goals.
Yes, sure. Plenty, unfortunately. But I just wonder what if there was something physical that happened with him, or if it just wasn't, you know, locked in for him like it needs to be from a vision standpoint, and if there's noise that the Sabres can do a better job of trying to control or minimize in front of him.
Bulldog, you must have been listening when I was on with your son, because I asked him some of these questions.
Okay.
He said a lot of what you were just saying when we were on together.
Yeah. Well, we do share a roof.
But it's true. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, I watch a lot of games with him. We talked about Lukanen almost every night we were watching a game if he was playing. Like, what's going on there? So, yeah.
Your son's now a coach of goaltenders. So, I mean, he knows what he's talking about. He's been doing it for quite a long period of time. So, just exactly what you're saying. And that was the thing, especially as the season got later. It's like there he was flying by the net again. And it's like, I thought you got rid of that.
Yeah.
You know, I thought you were past that, where, you all of a sudden you overplay it and you're totally past the net when the play happens. And it's something he worked on and got better at, but he slid back into it again. So,
yeah.
Again, that's something I'm sure that he's working on right now this summer.
I wonder how much teams sort of altered, found something, right? It seems like they're studying everybody, right? They're studying these goalies. And I wonder if there was something different about the way, like, they found a thing that they could exploit. And once the Sabres realized it and Lukanen realized it, you're trying to adjust on the fly. And again, the whole thing is it's very intricate. So it doesn't take a lot to disrupt it. And I just would love to know, like, how those counteractions are taking place and shaping up. If indeed I'm right. I mean, I'm just speculating here from what I saw, you know, largely on
definitely.
TV.
Definitely. You know, and I'm sure his goaltending coach in Finland saw it too. And that's one of the things, you know, they're working on. And, and it's going to be very interesting because, you know, as I said the whole off season, they can't. I know they say they can, and they're confident in it, but I just didn't. You can't go into the season with Lukanen and Levi. You just can't. It's too much hope, and you can't go into the season with hope. And they didn't. They went and signed Lyon. I think it's a good signing because you can turn to him. If Lukanen's not ready, you've got, you know, Levi down in Rochester doing his thing. And, you know, I like the setup now with what they got.
I'll echo what you said earlier about not waiting around for Lukanen to find his form next year. That could have, you know, been a problem this past season when he doesn't start great. It wasn't that Reimer was always good, but, you know, they ended up waiving him and sort of playing games with him. And then late in the season, Reimer ended up starting a lot because he was rolling there. So everything's easier with hindsight. But
do you remember what they did? And I hated it. Lukanen, to me, earned the number one spot, and they started alternating with Lukanen and Levi. Why? Because they want Levi to be their goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
So now they start alternating games. And if I'm Lukanen, I'm like, what are we doing here? You know, did you look at my numbers the last 35 games last year? Why are we alternating? You know, and I don't know if that was the problem with the way they started. I don't know how he felt about it because he never really wanted to talk about it. And it's just like, I'll play whenever Lindy Ruff tells me it's time to play. But this obsession that Kevin Adams has to make Levi his goaltender, he's done it twice now and failed both times. And I'm not saying it's going to fail all the time. He eventually might be a very good goaltender in the NHL. I don't know, but he certainly wasn't rated the two times he was handed the job.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline with us here for just a few more minutes. In other news, Paul, Bowen Byram is still on the Sabres, and the team elected arbitration. We've not talked to you since before the 4th of July holiday, and that happened over the holiday weekend. After Byram turned down the opportunity to file for arbitration, the Sabres did. So I think fans probably have some idea what that means. It's been said a lot and written a lot. Mm-hmm. He's no longer available for an offer sheet. I'm curious if you think the Sabres, I don't know, did they talked about saving the money in case of an offer sheet, but they, to an extent, ended up, well, largely, entirely, controlling whether he could get an offer sheet by taking this action. So I'm sort of wondering why save the money. But nonetheless.
Well, they're not Kreskin. I mean, they didn't know that there wasn't going to, I mean, they were prepared for an offer sheet, and there were people who thought that the Sabres were going to get one, and it didn't, so they were ready for it, in other words. So, you know, we'll see how this boils out. I mean, I have no opinion on it right now. I mean, I think they did a good, I mean, no opinion on the whole thing. I think they did what they should have done by taking him to arbitration. It took offer sheets off the table. And now, even when you're making a trade, you will have, you know, a financial idea now of what you're up against. You know, if you're going to trade for Bo Byram, is it going to be a one-year contract? What's the amount? Is it going to be a two-year contract? What's the amount? You know, and that's his decision now. He and his agent can decide if it's going to be 1 or 2 years, but at least you'll have financial certainty with what you're dealing with, whether it's a trade market. And, you know, I know a lot of people are already with the wisecracks, you know, well, what is $13 million? Well, let's find out what the, you know, if he signs, he's going to take part of that $13 million, you know, maybe $6 million of it.
Sure,
knows?
Right.
You know, whatever. Or if he's traded, well, theoretically, you're going to get one or two players back who are going to take part of that, you know. So let's see what it is. I doubt it's going to remain $13 million.
Right.
That
well,
means,
they still
that means
sign...
you traded him for draft picks.
Right.
If it remains $13 million, and then yeah, that's crazy.
They still have Timmins and Levi to sign too. Right.
Yeah. So, and Timmins, couple million maybe, and Levi's contract, you know, as far as it goes against the salary cap, will be in Rochester unless it's a one-way deal. And one-way deals actually doesn't go with, you know, part of it would depending how much it is. And one-way deal just means he gets paid NHL salary if he's in Rochester. So.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, it's so I'm kind of reserving judgment on how this
it. Sure
yeah how this mess is yeah. going to end up. It's there's so many ways it can end up that it's just like, okay, let's find out how they do this, and let's see what the final result is, then let's figure out if it was a huge mistake or not. But as far as taking him to arbitration, I think that was the right thing to do. It took the offer sheet off the table, and now, you know, he may wind up playing here another year or two. I don't see the harm in that, actually, unless you wind up getting him for nothing. Now, you can, if he elects a two-year contract, you can elect to negotiate after the first year, like we are with Tuck right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could trade him, and the other team could elect to negotiate, you know, that last year to a long-term contract. So it's not like if he elects two
right.
years, he's going into free agency unrestricted. There are ways you can
right.
stop that if he agrees to terms. So or trade him and at the trade deadline and get something for him if somebody wants him as a rental.
Right. And you can still trade him now, of course. And
sure.
a team, just like the Sabres can sign him to an 8-year contract extension if they want before this arbitration hearing. There's room to do that.
Well, the Sabres would have to do that. I think it's a 7-year.
Oh, because it's Pat. Yeah, the acquiring
right.
team doesn't have
but they
that
can do that.
But yeah.
The Sabres
right.
could actually yeah. make the contract.
Sign
and then
trade.
Him.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right.
This arbitration is the worst, isn't it? Like, that's where the Sabres will stand up and say all the things about Byram that they don't like.
After they've sat here for how long? And
I know.
And I don't think they're lying. I think they love Bo Byram as a player. I don't think they're lying with that. But then you got to go to arbitration and say you don't love him as a player.
Right.
I mean, so, yeah, Mike, you're exactly right. And there are sometimes hard feelings. You know, players sometimes leave the arbitration with hard feelings. And the it's almost, you know, like politics, you know the way politicians talk.
Boy,
you know,
that, I don't want to say a name and have it be wrong, but there's a former Sabre I can remember there being a story maybe years later. This player admitted, like, you know, I didn't the arbitration thing. I would like to have. I wish I could have avoided it.
Dumont.
It just hurt me.
There were a couple of them actually, and I don't remember the names of. But
yeah.
There's more than one Bulldog.
Well, Dumont, they turned their back on his award, and he went and left as a free agent.
Right.
But that's not who that hurt.
Tim
I know
Kennedy,
he was
they
hurt,
turned their back on.
But I can't remember who. It
and
was.
Darcy Regier told Tim Kenny's agent, if you get more than $1 million, we're walking away.
Yeah, this wasn't so
and
much a scenario where they walked away from the award. It was just the process of the hearing the people in charge tear the player apart. But it affected the player, like it left a mark, you know. Like,
yeah.
It would have been better for me not to sit in a room with my bosses hearing how much I suck.
That is familiar to me too, but I don't remember who.
Yeah, I don't want to say a name. I don't
yeah.
want to guess.
Yeah,
Hodgson, did he go to arbitration?
That's the name I was thinking of.
Maybe it was him.
Maybe it was him. We're both thinking him. I don't know.
Ay, ay, ay. All right, Paul, would you like to see the Bills return to red helmets?
No.
You're against
that. I like
that.
The white ones better.
All right.
I just have always just liked the white ones better. I wouldn't mind seeing that blue one that Josh Allen, not on a regular basis, but for a game or something.
The one he wore at the practice a couple years ago?
He's rolled that out. I think that's kind of sharp looking, but not as full time, you know, just as a,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever uniform they might want to wear that with once. But, no, I like the white helmets better than I like the red helmets. I never really cared for the red helmets. Just
right.
like I never cared for the blue pants and white jerseys. If it's blue pants and blue jersey, I'm fine. But the blue pants and white jersey, I think, is one of the worst uniforms in the NFL. I think it looks awful.
Hmm. Okay. I don't mind it, and I hate the all blue.
I do too.
Yeah,
I don't
like,
know how
my,
it is.
My
we're
favorite
friends,
would be the all white.
Yeah, same white. Here. Same here.
But I would take the all blue over the white top and blue pants. I'm not like a huge fan
yeah.
of the all blue, but I would take it over the white jersey.
I'm okay if they go to the red helmet again, but I would admit that the thing that soured me a little on it is how they changed the striping on it during that Bledsoe era. When the uniform change came, they kept red helmets, but they worked that like sort of yucky blue into the center stripe, and I just never liked that at all.
What
obviously
was the deal with Joe Ferguson when they originally changed? Was it there was too many white helmets and he couldn't?
The whole division was white helmets.
That's a story.
Except the Jets.
Yeah.
They've had white helmets at times too, but the Dolphins, Colts, and Patriots all had white.
I wanted to make sure I was right on that, that it was just too many white helmets running around the field.
Too many white helmets. Imagine if a guy said that now. I mean, I don't know if Ferguson like was went public with that. It's always the story I heard. That's the legend, right?
He was asked about it. Yeah, okay. I mean, he was definitely asked. I don't remember what he said, but that is why the Bills did it. I just wanted to make sure I was right on that before I said that as fact. But that's why they did it.
Like, what if Tua would say that? No. Right.
Hey, we need different helmets.
Struggling with the white helmets and all these division games. I'd like to see that. It would just go over so badly.
Right.
You know? All right. Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
All right. It's our Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. His appearance is with us, brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. I'm on a roll not reading that.
That was you knocking?
That was me. His appearances are always brought to you by, and I started to do the outlet liquor thing in my mind, and that's why I tapped. That was me resetting. Like, no.
Yes.
Don't say outlet liquor here. This is Equitable Advisors and Relax Honda. Relax.
I thought maybe a Wink Martindale impersonator was about to arrive when I hear that knocking. Or maybe it'll be Schwarzenegger, or maybe it'll be Tom Arnold. We should be so lucky. Washington is calling its tweaked uniforms the Super Bowl era. And I guess that works. 80s. They won three. They won three in the 80s with different quarterbacks. One coach, but three different starting quarterbacks. Theismann, Williams, Rippon.
But Rippon wasn't in the 80s, though.
91. That's right. The decade there.
Right.
82, the strike year.
I'm all right with
the
Super Bowl era. They were wearing that gear, and they won three Super Bowls in 10 or 11 years. I'm good there.
Yeah. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. That's totally great.
I have signed mini helmets from the first 30 Super Bowl MVPs, and I display them behind me on my podcasts. And I, try to come up with some, what I think is maybe a clever combination, depending on what's in the news or who's playing. During the season, I always try to have there be two matchups from that week if I can find. I only have the first 30, and a lot of teams don't make the cut. But I don't display the Washington ones. I'd feel weird about it. I have them. I like having them. I love the Riggins signature on his.
Yeah.
But I don't display the logo.
Right.
Which, I don't know. These days,
right,
somebody sees that and questions you.
I think if folks don't know, by the way, Washington doing this with the uniform, the helmet is going to be the W. There had been some talk about returning to the name and some stuff like just undercurrents last year, but they're keeping that logo off of the helmet, the old logo.
And I wouldn't want a new helmet signed by those guys because they didn't wear it.
Right.
So I respect the change that they made. I don't like the name. I respect the change that they made, but it does kind of box you in, I think, for like memorabilia and stuff like that, for whatever that's worth. I mean, I like that Washington. The logo is, considered offensive, and I respect that. But I like the color and the signature and like the style of it otherwise. But I don't know. To this point, I haven't felt good about
like putting it out.
Putting it out there. And I have three of them.
Well, if you have the first stamp, they're all in that wheelhouse.
It's almost like not having them.
Right.
All right. We talked earlier with John Harris from the Houston Texans broadcast team. It wasn't all about Houston. We had a good conversation about a book that he's written. That's coming up next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.